We're off to the races, powered by The Racing Biz, your independent voice for Mid-Atlantic racing and breeding. On the web at www.theracingbiz.com. And on the radio every Saturday morning, it's Off to the Races. Here's your host.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to Off to the Races Radio, powered by The Racing Biz. Thanks so much for spending a little bit of your Saturday morning with us here on Off to the Races. We do appreciate it. My name's Frank Vespi, and for the next, 60 minutes or so, we're going to be talking thoroughbred racing and breeding right here in Maryland, across the Mid-Atlantic, and around the country. This show, today's show, as always, powered by The Racing Biz, theracingbiz.com. You got the website, you got the socials, look for at The Racing Biz, you got the free mobile app, all kinds of ways to keep up with Mid-Atlantic racing and breeding. And I got to tell you, we're going to have just boatloads of content this coming week. Tons and tons of Preakness coverage, Pimlico coverage, going to be on site all week. And you can look for us on theracingbiz.com. Also with our partners, the Baltimore Banner, thebaltimorebanner.com. You can find our coverage there and some of their coverage here at The Racing Biz. And I got to say, what a show we've got teed up for you today. And I've got to tell you, I got a mystery guest here. Got to put that aside. But our first guest, our mystery guest, coming up just a few minutes from now, he's one you're going to want to hear from. I'm going to leave it at that. But it's good stuff. You're going to want to stick around. You're going to want to hear what our mystery guest has to say. He's going to be batting leadoff just a few minutes from now. I'm going to close things out today. This is way in the future. This is way off, like 12 minutes to 11 or thereabouts. I'm going to bring in Nick Hahn to help us analyze last week's Kentucky Derby and more, and a look ahead to the Preakness Plus. Got to stick around all the way to the end of the hour because Nick's going to break a little news about a Preakness new shooter, a new shooter in the Preakness. That's all coming up way in the future towards 11 o'clock. Before that, we're going to have Cindy Dubler from the Maryland Horse Breeders Association. She's going to join us to talk about goings on at the Maryland Horse Library this week and beyond. Fran Burns is going to be in for a quick chat. Fran runs the Sunrise at Old Hilltop Tours at Pimlico. Those are taking place this coming week, Tuesday through Friday, between 6 and 9 each morning. Good stuff, a great tool to entice people out to Pimlico and to kind of knit Pimlico into the community that surrounds it. Good stuff, Sunrise at Old Hilltop coming up this week. Also going to talk with Keith Fustel. He's the line maker for the Maryland Jockey Club at Laurel and Pimlico. He's going to make the morning line for the upcoming Preakness, the Black Eyed Susan, and all the rest of the races next weekend. Going to kind of tell us about the art and science of making the morning line. Special thanks to friends of this show, like the Maryland Horse Breeders Association, Richard Hackerman, attorney at law, True Valor, a new stallion standing at Northview Stallion Station, and our friends at Wanamakers online horse racing or horse auction site. Wanamakers.com is the website. Now, let's take a look back at last week and let's answer this question. When does a jockey who wins just 3 out of 25 races consider that a great week? Answer? When it's Javier Castellano, and 2 of the 3 that he won were the Kentucky Derby and the American Turf. Let's start with the latter. The latter brought together most of Nick Hahn's Turf 10 list of the top Turf 3-year-olds. It went in a thriller to Web Slinger. Here's how it sounded.
And they're into the stretch. Mo Stash trying to take it the distance. Carl Speckler comes after him. Web Slinger, Major Dude, one off the rail. Firebrand is coming with a rush on the inside. And for the back of the pack, and the winner is making a rush. Web Slinger on the outside, fighting on Mo Stash. Major Dude coming up the rail. These three going to come down to the wire in a thriller. And it's going to be Web Slinger.
Web Slinger, now 3-for-8 in his career, trained by Mark Cassie for DJ Stable. A few races later, Castellano struck again, this time in the big one, aboard Mage to win the Kentucky Derby.
Here's two Phils making a move on the inside, and the two of them hook up, and Jareth Loveberry has taken two Phils to the front. and Kings Barnes is running in second. Hickshow is circled up on the outside as they come to the top of the stretch, and they're into the stretch, and Two Fills has turned for home on top. Kings Barnes, here's Mage coming strongly down the outside. Angel and Empire is putting in his run, and there's one furlong to run. Two Fills on the inside, trying to hold off Mage. Mage is taking the lead here as they come into the final 16th, and it is going to be Mage to win the Kentucky Derby.
So if you're like me and you had Two Fills, not exactly the outcome you were hoping for, although he did run a huge race. But Mage gets the money, son of Good Magic. That was just his fourth career start. He's 2 for 4. He had previously finished second to Morning Line Derby favorite Forte in the Florida Derby. Forte, as we know, was a scratch out of the Kentucky Derby, a vet scratch the morning of the Derby. So Forte comes out. Mage gets the money. Now 2 for 4 in his career. He earned this win by rallying from well off the pace, fast pace, to prevail by a length over Two Fills, who, as I said, ran a phenomenal race. Now, Mage is trained by Gustavo Delgado Sr. for an ownership group that includes, among other people, his son, Gustavo Jr. Gustavo Jr. is also his assistant trainer. So assistant trainer, part owner, quite the family affair for Mage. We're really excited to bring in now Kentucky Derby winner Gustavo Delgado Jr. joining us here on Off to the Races Radio. All right, Gustavo Delgado Jr., thank you so much for taking a few minutes. I know you guys are just going crazy with things to do right now. We really appreciate you making a couple minutes for us here on Off to the Races.
No, thank you, Frank. Thanks for having me, man.
I really appreciate it. So let me ask you this. You guys have been really consistent since the Derby in saying that Mage is doing great. You really like what you're seeing, but also that you wanted to wait till the end of the week to make a decision on the Preakness. And now that you have and you're coming, what is it that you wanted to see from the horse before you made the commitment to come to Baltimore?
Well, we already made a decision official, Frank, this morning. Ramiro and Chase, co-owners, partners on the horse, that they did pretty much the release in the morning that we on to the Preakness. Horses, yeah, giving all the right signs that you want to see, and we just wanted to wait and take it day by day and let the horse tell us pretty much what he wanted to do, where he was at, and so far he's giving us all the right signs. What I mean with the right signs, he's eating everything. He's got a good eye. The energy level seems to be intact. And I think Franz, since he's been so lightly raced, we are in the impression that he's actually getting better with race after race. And pretty much that's what we think now. Of course, every day is crucial. And now we getting on a band for certain amount of hours. That's always, some sort of, I wouldn't say a concern, but something that we need to address and pass and see how he gets to Baltimore, that kind of thing. But other than that, he looks pretty good.
You mentioned that he seems to be getting better race after race, and it's really a remarkable job that you and your father and your team did getting this horse with just 3 races under his belt, not only to the Kentucky Derby, but to win the Kentucky Derby. When did you guys start to think, like, we might have a pretty special horse on our hands?
Friend, I don't know if you're aware, but I was involved in the purchase of the colt when he was pretty much a little less than a year ago at the sale.
Sure.
Together with Ramiro, we went to the sale. I liked the horse, and we decided to go after him. And there's a nice story because we went a little bit over the budget that we had, and ever since we bought him at the sale, I always had a good opinion on the horse, and that was like pretty much like my little project that I always keep an eye on, and every time the horse, you know, when he was getting close to race and that kind of thing, he always was as fast and dominant, and pretty much his behavior, it's one of the things that I like the most about him, his mind. He's a very cool, calm, collected horse, and pretty much about from the beginning. And then, of course, when he was ready to have his first race on Pegasus Day, I was pretty confident that race is going to put a show, and that's what he did. And then when, you know, we went pretty soon to up the ladder, I would say, and then we jump on the Fun of Youth. That was a big jump, asking two turns against horses that already won stakes races, and he didn't look bad at all. And the main reason we did that is because we didn't want him to get just one chance, one shot to get Derby points. Mm-hmm. We knew there was a big jump, but for any reason he was getting third or fourth, that he actually got 10 points in that race in the final youth. And then when he came back, and then for the third race, which was the Florida Derby, we were between the Florida Derby and the Bluegrass Stakes. And my dad, at the end, made the decision of staying in Florida because that was the base. He was already running there, and he didn't want to add a trip, a long trip, coming back to Kentucky. And he surprised, well, I wouldn't say that he surprised us, but because we were waiting for a big race, but the way he ran in the Florida Derby, we still believe that he surprised the rider, he surprised us, he surprised everybody. And turning for that, he showed that day, you don't usually see that a Gulfstream, especially coming from behind. Gulfstream usually it favors the horses that are speed, I mean the speed or close to the speed, as you know, sure. And you don't usually see that kind of move from a horse comes from behind, cycling the field, and that fast, that soon. So we saw at one point during that race that we were going to win, but again we were running against a very good horse as Forte is, and we didn't feel shame at all running second, but we knew that we had a pretty damn good horse, and that he was getting just ready for a big effort, like just like he did at the Derby last week. And also the fact that I always knew that he would like this track at Churchill, and he confirmed that since he started galloping, and the weather as well, because coming from Gulfstream, because we raised a Gulfstream, and the weather horses usually seem to like a more chilly weather like we have when we got here. That kind of thing, the horse just love it from from the first time that he got in Churchill. So during the week, we felt very confident about how he was doing and what he was about to show.
And he certainly showed it. I'm talking with Gustavo Delgado Jr. right here on Off to the Races Radio, powered by the Racing Biz. Looking forward to seeing Mage. Mage is scheduled to arrive in Baltimore probably Saturday evening, is my understanding. And I know people are going to be excited to see him. Gustavo, I wanted to ask you this. I don't own horses currently, but I've owned horses over the years. And I know what a great feeling it is to win a race, because it's so easy to lose a race and so many things have to go right for you to win a race. But obviously I've never won the Kentucky Derby. Can you compare, I mean, what is that feeling like for you, winning the Derby versus just winning, you know, when he won a maiden race, for example?
Frank, the Derby was the ultimate goal. The first time we ran in the Derby was in 2016. With a horse named Bajesto. We knew back then that we basically were coming here for the experience, and because the horse, I mean, talented horse, of course, because he deserved to be in the Derby that year, but clearly was some signs of immaturity and about just about talent, and that's when Nyquist won it, and he beat us in at the Florida Derby. We were in second. That's when we got the points, and we knew. I mean, we knew Nyquist was in another level. So we kind of, I mean, it could happen because you know it's a horse race and anything can happen, sure. But we were more about, you know, the excitement of the Derby and being present and the experience. But I will tell you, I mean, that year, me coming here as a participant, because I previously have come as a fan, and then I got hooked, definitely. And then every day, every year, every sale since then, we always have the Derby dream in our minds, and having the opportunity to accomplish that last year, it was like a big manifestation of all our dreams. Because I mean, we are a big team here. We have several owners, and each one of them has their own story about the Derby, of course, and. And to me, personal, it's about the reason why we made, you know how the life of horsemen is. It's a lot of sacrifices, not just our sacrifices, but our family as well, because we are not present in many things that we have to, you know. Again, sacrifice, not being in birthday parties, mm-hmm. Staying till late. We pretty much work during weekends. I can recall a holiday, a long holiday that my dad and I had. That kind of thing. So that and when with that kind of win, that's when you. Pretty much, it makes everything makes sense that all this hard work and all those sacrifices paying off.
It certainly is. Last question, I'll let you go. What is it like doing this with your father, and how does that make it? How does that change the experience? I guess.
Well, Frank, my dad and I, we have a pretty special relationship. I always said it, he's not just my dad, he's my best friend, he's my partner, my mentor, somebody that I always look up to. And
And it's a beautiful experience being able to share that with him. And we've been working as a team hand to hand for the last we'll say 15 years maybe. And every person that know us from before, we're very close. We're very close, and it's an amazing feeling. I mean, I wish every father-son relationship have that kind of first the bonding that my dad have, and then being able to have that kind of experience. This is something that I will never forget, and it will last in our memories forever. And hopefully, my family was there too. I have my sisters, and they came with their sons, and then my nephews and nieces, they were there too, and they are like between 6 and 9 years old. And they are a bunch of kids, because one of my sisters, she got 4, and the other one's got 2, so there's 6. And I mean, that goes right into you know, their subconscious. I said that in the interview, and that it made me right after when I was receiving the trophy. And the for them to see my dad, like, just like I did, like a superhero growing up, it's an amazing feeling for them as well. So it's a validation, because they already came back to Venezuela, and they already went to school, and they were like, my grandpa and my uncle, they just won the Kentucky Derby, and it was like, you know, they maybe a little bragging going on, but that's a nice feeling for me and my family.
Good stuff. Well, Gustavo Delgado Jr., thank you for joining us here on Off to the Races. We wish you good luck in the Preakness and going forward with Mage, and we look forward to seeing you in Baltimore.
Perfect, Clark. Anytime. Thank you. Appreciate the good wishes, and let's go. Horses doing good, and we ship out tomorrow.
Good stuff there from Gustavo Delgado Jr., the co-owner, assistant trainer, assisting his father, Gustavo Sr., in the training of Kentucky Derby winner Mage. Mage on his way to Baltimore as we speak, expected later on this evening at Old Hilltop at Pimlico, going to try for the second jewel in the Triple Crown. So pretty exciting stuff. Very pleased to have had Gustavo Delgado Jr. here on Off to the Races Radio. Lots still to do here. Coming up in a little bit, we're going to have Fran Burns talking about Sunrise at Old Hilltop, tours you can take of Pimlico. Keith Fustel, the Pimlico linemaker, talking about the challenges of making the line for Black Eyed Susan and Preakness Days. And end of the hour, we're going to have Nick Hahn in, kind of give you a horse player's eye view of what happened last week at Kentucky Derby, the American Turf, other races, and also to look ahead to the Preakness coming up May 20. But before we get to any of that, I want to bring in Cindy Dubler. Cindy works for the Maryland Horse Breeders Association, good friends of this program, and she manages the Maryland Horse Library and Education Center in Reisterstown. She's going to be in to tell us a couple of interesting programs they have coming up, Preakness Week and beyond. Let's give it a listen. Cindy Dubler, good morning. Welcome to the program. Hey, Preakness Week, I want to buy a book. Can you help me out?
I think so. We're having our first book sale at the Maryland Horse Library and Education Center in Reisterstown. And it's 2 days of getting a chance to browse through a lot of duplicate books that we have in our collection.
And that's not all you guys have going on up at the Maryland Horse Library. I understand there are author signings and an author talk. Tell us briefly, who's coming in to sign books?
On Wednesday, May 17th, we're having 4 different authors come in, 2 in the morning, which will be Josh Pong, who wrote Country Life Diary in Maryland, and also Alvin Stone, who wrote a book about his father called Stoney. The Story of My Dad's Life, an African-American Groom of Horse Racing. Alvin had been in earlier this year to do an author talk on his book. Josh is well-known in the area, and they will have new copies of their book that they'll sign, and you can chat with the authors. And then in the afternoon, from 1 to 3, we have John Eisenberg, who's been a wonderful source of different books on the history of racing, and he'll be in with books like his Native Dancer, The Gray Ghost, and he wrote a book on Lily T, and also on Barbaro, and then a historic book on A Great Match Race, and he did some of his research in our library over the years, and we're thrilled to have John in, and then also Jack Gilden, who wrote a book about Spectacular Bid. And so again, they'll be in the afternoon from 1 to 3, and you'll get a chance to meet them and, you know, talk about their books and get them signed.
And then on Thursday, May 18th, you're going to have an author talk with Patricia McQueen. Tell us about her book.
Yes, Patricia's coming in from out of town. She'll be in on Thursday afternoon, starting at 4 p.m. With an author talk. And she wrote a book about Secretariat and his progeny, and she followed them for decades and has a beautiful coffee table style book with lots of photographs. Patricia is a wonderful photographer, and she's going to talk about her, you know, tracking down all his descendants and about, you know, the process of putting her book together. It's a true labor of love for her to complete this book. And so we're looking forward to having Patricia in. And she'll be in after the book sale ends. Our book sale will be continuing on Thursday, again, from 11 to 3.
Patricia McQueen, the book is Secretariat's Legacy. People's appetite for Secretariat information never seems to slake. So that should be a pretty interesting talk. A little bit of a different angle there, looking at the progeny of Secretariat. Cindy, while we have you, talk about, you know, how are things sort of going at the library? Is this gradually becoming kind of an important and valuable community resource?
We definitely are hoping so, and we feel that it is. We've been getting a number of people coming in to use our meeting space for meetings for their different group and regular attendance for those. We've also had a monthly talk or some kind of event. And we have one scheduled for the end of May about the Retired Racehorse Project with the group that runs the Retired Racehorse Project. That talk will be the fourth Monday of May, which would be May 22nd. And we will have some book talk as well in June. You can find the whole schedule on our library website at marylandhorse.com/library. And we continue to add more events. We do have a talk coming in June, in the first week of June, right before Belmont Stakes, with Jennifer Kelly, who wrote a book about the Triple Crown winners from Bel Air. So she'll be in on, that's a special event, and that's on, again, Thursday, June 8th at 4 p.m.
Jennifer Kelly also writes for The Racing Biz, theracingbiz.com. You can read her Backtracks column each month. Cindy Dubler, good stuff. Maryland Horse Library is the place, marylandhorse.com/library. You can find it right in downtown Reisterstown. Cindy, thanks so much.
You're welcome. Nice to talk with you, Frank.
That was Cindy Dubler of the Maryland Horse Breeders Association, good friends of this program. You're listening to Off to the Races Radio, powered by The Racing Biz, theracingbiz.com. You keep up with Mid-Atlantic Racing and breeding all week long on theracingbiz.com. Still to come here on Off to the Races Radio, going to have Keith Fustel, the line maker for Pimlico, talking about making the line for the Preakness and the Black-Eyed Susan. We're going to have a horse player's eye view of what happened last week at the Kentucky Derby and a look ahead to the Preakness with Nick Hahn. But right now, I want to bring in Fran Burns. Fran spearheads the Sunrise at Old Hilltop tours taking place this coming Tuesday through Friday from 6 to 9 every morning at Pimlico. Your chance to get up close and personal with a horse, learn a lot more about the racetrack, and learn about the history of Old Hilltop. Here's Fran Burns. Fran Burns, let me start you with this. What does Pimlico mean to you and to Maryland Racing?
I think, first of all, I grew up learning about Pimlico from my mom, so it's the second oldest racetrack, and it has so much history. Back in the day when racing was really the king sport, I think, first of all, that's something that speaks to me. I think the fact that it's in Baltimore and it supports Maryland racing is also a key component. It's a very special place with the history, and as you and I have talked about, there's something very magical about sitting on the apron of the racetrack. There was no one around today. They're getting ready for Preakness, but there's just an air about it that's magic.
You used the phrase sacred ground a little earlier off air. Expand on that a little bit.
Again, I grew up learning about Pimlico from my mom. My mom actually was at the Seabiscuit race. My great-grandfather was treasurer of the state of Maryland, and he was very good friends with Mr. Riddle. And my mother was here all the time. She would tell me stories about how they would come out on a train from the country and get all dressed up. And I actually had a great occasion last week to walk through the museum and was admiring some of those pictures. And the women were completely dressed up in high heels and sunglasses, and they were at the old clubhouse. And I recall the night that the clubhouse burned. I was really young, but I remember my mom at the kitchen table crying, saying, "It's gone, it's gone." And she used to describe to me the racing library and the leather seats and how fancy it was. And so I have a great deal of respect for this place, and of course for Sagamore as well.
We're here at Pimlico, so we are getting a little bit of racetrack noise in the background, but Fran, how many people will come through these tours over the next 4 days that it, Tuesday through Friday, that they occur?
We're hoping that we get about 2,000 people. We have in the past, and that is truly when we've had ideal weather conditions. You just don't know. If it rains, a lot of people don't come. We do tour in the rain. We'll move some things inside as best as possible, and we'll put raincoats on, and away we go. The horses are still in the barn. There's still a lot happening, and we're going to be there.
So talk about what will people see when they come on this tour.
You'll see a lot of really cool things that you probably have never seen before. The starting gate, for one, we introduced that last year, and that is a really cool thing to learn about and get really up close to. We also have Frankie Douglas as the jockey, and he'll talk to you a little bit about what it's like to be a jockey. The Baltimore City Mounted Police, we haven't had them since 2018, so we're really excited to welcome them back with their horses. We will have a farrier here, so you get to learn a little bit about shoeing, which is always cool. And probably best of all is I have a really great lineup of mystery guests. Michael Blowen from Old Friends, for example, will be here Thursday and Friday. And we have a plethora of horsemen. And I'll just leave it at that. You'll be surprised.
Come on, not even a hint?
Nope, it's a secret.
Man, she is a vault. Talking with Fran Burns here, Sunrise at Old Hilltop, taking place Tuesday through Friday at Pimlico. And so if I hear this on the radio and say, this sounds cool, can I just show up and do the tour?
Absolutely. Our tours are from 6 until 9. You'll park at the Rogers Avenue parking lot. It's a very easy place in and out. There's a gate right there where you walk into the apron of the track, go to the tent, sign in, and you'll be ready to roll. We have coffee and donuts waiting for you. And if you come Friday, we're going to have Old Bay Bagels.
Old Bay Bagels? I might have to come for that.
That's truly
Save
Baltimore.
Save me one, will you?
Absolutely.
Atta girl. Now, one of the things that you guys do as part of this that I think is really interesting is you have the students from one of the local schools come in. Talk about that.
Arlington Elementary Middle School is going to be bringing 500 children. Their school is right up the street, so they'll walk over. We do a special tour for them. Tim Tulloch has a wonderful Learn About the Pony display. We do an interactive drawing exercise with them where they make their own stick ponies. We'll be giving them TAA coloring books and some crayons to take home with them. They'll get to see the starting gate, the winner's circle, a lot of the experience, the flavor of what happens at the racetrack.
Which is really cool because it's a way, to me, it seems like, of knitting Pimlico into the surrounding community that doesn't always happen and is sort of a complex endeavor.
The principal told me that this is their very, very favorite field trip. And from the standpoint of the tour guides, they truly are a favorite group. These kids love it here.
Well, hopefully some of them come back sometimes and get jobs or become fans and betters. And
owners, trainers, you never know. Maybe
exactly.
We'll see them at Preakness.
Well, maybe one day one of them will show up with a horse in the Preakness.
I would love that.
That would be a pretty neat outcome, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it really would.
What do people tell you when they take these tours? What do they tell you about the experience?
First thing they say is that it's the best kept secret, that they had no idea we had these tours. Then we have people that drive from New Jersey every year. They love it. Every year they get a little bit of new information. Each tour guide provides a different perspective. And so I recommend, if you went with Wendy last year, why don't you go with Janelle this year? And you'll learn something new.
So come to Pimlico, Sunrise at Old Hilltop Tours. You learn a little bit of the history, meet a blacksmith, meet some horsemen, meet a horse.
Pet the horse. Anything goes. I can't tell you what's going to happen on the tour because we actually never know. But we're going to make it fun for you.
All right. Fran Burns, sounds good. Thank you very much. And folks should definitely check out Sunrise at Old Hilltop. Is there a way they can get more information online or something?
You can go on the Preakness website for Sunrise Tours, and you can get more information. You do not have to pre-register in advance. Just show up, and we'll see you at the sign-in tent.
All right. Preakness.com is the website. Thanks so much.
Tuesday through Friday of Preakness Week, 6 a.m. to 9 a.m. So once you're done touring Old Hilltop, you got to start thinking about the races, maybe start thinking about betting on the races. And that is something we have a little bit of expertise about. I want to bring in another guest. I want to bring in Keith Fustel. Keith is the line maker for Laurel and Pimlico. He'll be making the morning line for Preakness Day, for Black Eyed Susan Day, 14 races each day. And important thing to understand about what the morning line maker is trying to do is he's essentially handicapping the public. So trying to figure out how is the betting public going to bet this race so that when you pick up your past performances, he's giving you, in essence, a guide to what the odds might be and how the public may value the different horses. It's a useful thing to understand. You know, if you have a good line maker, he can kind of tell you, okay, this horse probably going to be the favorite. This horse will get bet. This horse might get ignored. And that's useful information as you're trying to figure out in advance where there might be value in the wagering. Let's hear a little bit more from Keith Fustel, the line maker at Pimlico.
Well, Keith Fustel, thanks so much for joining us here on Off to the Races. You're making the line, going to be making the line for Preakness Weekend. Let me start you with this. You've got 28 races to do over Black Eyed Susan Day and Preakness Day. How do you get all that done? That's 3 days worth of races in 2 days.
That is a lot of work. And, you know, I think the toughest part, we've got horses coming from everywhere. Day in and day out racing, familiar with the product, familiar with the trainers, familiar with the jockeys, trainer angles, everything like that. So things are a little bit easier. But, you know, I don't spend a ton of time looking at the national scene. So from a line making standpoint, you know, I have to dig a little bit deeper. I've got to kind of, you know, key some races, see how horses were bet, you know, against some other competition at other racetracks. I draw upon my man Action Andy a little bit, who kind of watches the national scene a little bit more than I do. But, you know, doing this so long, we kind of know to a point where John Q. Public's going to kind of go to. There'll be some smart money coming, and that's the things we don't like missing from a morning line standpoint. So year in and year out, it is definitely a challenge. It's a long, long couple nights when we get those PPs and grind through them. But I think for the most part, we've done pretty good year in and year out since kind of taking over from Frank Carulli, who set a high, high standard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, does Carulli weigh in on these?
He will. If we can kind of get him away from his action in Vegas,
always a trick.
He'll phone in and we'll throw him on the speaker, and it's a lot of fun. Vinny Perrone has been gracious enough to help in the past, and I love the team atmosphere, and that's something Frank kind of started years ago, and it works well because I trust their opinion. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm going to be the final say. It's on me, but it definitely helps to have their opinion.
Now, so when the way you kind of judge this in the end is if you're right, your favorite and the public's favorite are the same horse.
Yeah, that's what we're doing. We're basically not telling you who we like. We're telling you, you know, when we put that line out, it's a guide. that's where the public is going to kind of go. That's where we think this particular horse, St. Mage, is going to wind up on the tote board when they leave the gate.
Well, let's talk, you just mentioned Mage, let's talk about him for a minute, because mm-hmm. I remember going back, this is going back a number of years now, like I think Charismatic, who had won the Derby at long odds, mm-hmm. I think he was about 8-1 in the yeah. Preakness, and mm-hmm. and Mage obviously was a horse at a little bit long odds in the Derby when he won.
Yeah.
Do you think the public's going to make him favored, or are you going to kind of split the difference a little bit? How do you handle a horse like that?
I certainly do think they're going to make him the favorite based on his competition, you know, that's presented right now, that what I have in front of him. Is, say, if a horse like Forte would have come along and been able to kind of run in the Preakness, I probably would have made him the favorite. But looking at what we've kind of got right in front of us, Mage, little slight gappage to First Mission, who took plenty of play in the Preakness Future wager. We thought he would take a lot of late action. He took a late punch. I think he'll take play. I think Disarms a Horse and even National Treasure will garner some attention as well.
Is it, you alluded to this earlier, it seems like it's an extra challenge here, is, you know, like when you do Pimlico on a normal day, these mm-hmm. horses would have run against each other, they'd have a yep. record against each other, they'd also have a sort of betting record against each other, and now you're getting horses that have never seen each mm-hmm. other with trainers who almost never see each
and
other.
You hit it right on the head. That's the key, the kind of betting, you know, trends that when they have a little bit of a pattern, you know, these really don't. Of who they, you've got a couple horses coming out of some races, you know, say the Lexington or Louis Inter, a couple of them match up, and we kind of use that to see how you know they were bet in each race comparatively, and then we'll work that into the system. But that's what makes it hard race in and race out for this weekend with all of these stakes races going on.
And you've got even for the non-stakes, like the allowance races, mm-hmm. you usually have shippers mm-hmm. come in, yep. and they, you know, somebody just has a space in the van and they bring a horse that...
Yes, and you'll see a situation, you know, obviously, you know, a Brad Cox brings a horse in or say a Baffert or Aspison, and they're, you know, they've got them pointed to an A other than off of a big maiden score somewhere else. I've got to give a little bit more credence to them. Because, you know, for that particular day, you know, the National Pub, they're going to be on. And even riders, too, Frank. When you see the riders who line up, mm-hmm. you've got to judge them a little bit, especially in those allowance races, if they're able to take, if they're willing to take them out there.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Talking to Pimlico linemaker Keith mm-hmm. Fustel and Frank Carulli once told me he had a rule of thumb that he didn't want to make a horse over 30 if he could avoid it, because he, for a variety of yeah. reasons, but he felt like it was sort of insulting is probably too strong a word, but
right.
to the owner in particular, mm-hmm. who might be in the race for a variety of reasons that we
yeah.
don't know about.
Yeah.
Do you have a rule like that?
Or you know, I'm close, but you know, if I see a horse that's going to be, you know, 60, 70, 80-1 that I'm confident in, you know, sometimes you wake up the public. They'll see 51 on the line, and they'll just go ahead and bet. People, they're, you know, so you'll see horses, you know, kind of end up below that. But I may have a 50. I'll definitely have a 30 on this line, mm-hmm. no doubt. Mm-hmm. Just because we've got to work it to scale a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and that's its own piece, right? Mm-hmm. Its own challenge is whatever you think has to actually kind of add up to
yeah.
what the betting can be.
Yeah, so then we'll adjust accordingly to kind of let it go at that. And, you know, sometimes we have to do it. I don't like to do it. I agree with Frank. You know, everybody involved in this game, they put so much time and effort into it. But it is a betting game, and I've got to be kind of, you know, fair to the public and say this is the opinion. This is where I think it's going to go. From an odd standpoint, and I'll go that way.
You have any sort of moments or races where you went in a direction that a lot of people thought was not the right direction and it turned out to be the right direction?
Mm.
Sort of a favorite line-making moment?
I had a really bad line-making moment. I'll tell you, Colonial Downs, way, way back in the Virginia Derby, a horse was first-time Dutch Row. Coming in off some good races, Kip DeVille was the horse, and I remember vividly. And I think I made the horse 7-2, might have made the horse morning line favorite in the race, thinking when the barn changed and Edgar Prado was supposed to ride, and you know, you and how Prado was so beloved by the fans down there, and the race goes on. You know, I'm watching the betting. The horse opens with no play, stays with no play, kept going up. I kept going back to the window and betting. I'm like, I just can't be this wrong, can I? I was that wrong from a line-making standpoint. The horse ran huge. I think opened up, a commanding lead just to get run down. I think it was showing up that might have run him down. Mm-hmm. But that was a disappointing from a betting standpoint, getting beat and just completely wrong on the line. That was terrible. Yeah.
You know, I ask you for a good story.
I give you a horror story. That's the game. Yes. It is a good story. It's entertaining. Yeah.
No, it's a good story. All right. So it's looking like Mage to you.
Yes.
Is how you see it. And are there particular trainers or connections or horses that or jockeys, I guess is the word I was looking for, that tend to take unusual action, you think? Like more action maybe than, or less action than their past performances would otherwise warrant?
Yeah, you'll get that. And a lot even, you know, bigger days like this, they mix in the pot. But you'll see, you know, the New York money is strong. And especially if it's not a Preakness weekend or what, but if an Ortiz, comes in or something like that, yes, I will have to adjust accordingly. If I think that horse, normal standards could be six, I could lower that horse to four easily, knowing that that money will come in.
I talked to Kenny Taylor one time, who owned Extra Heat, and he said he always liked betting against the New York horses when they came in. He said they always get bet, and he said, you know, you don't see them coming here and winning a lot. We don't go there and win a lot, but they don't come here and win a lot either, he said. So,
yeah, that's something too, an angle a lot of times with early in the cards on these bigger days, you know, you'll see, you know, a name rider maybe sometimes on a horse that's, you know, an all right horse, looks like he's kind of live, and it's just, you know, they just tend to get over bet and kind of steer away from those horses.
So is there any, you put any credence in the jockey who stays for the late race after the feature on a big day angle?
Sitting around all day or, you know, obviously had some action. But yeah, there's a little bit to be said. Yeah, there might be a little story behind that. Or especially if it's like, a maiden race late in the day, a first-time starter, and say they gave them the story. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
All right, Keith Fiestel, thank you so much.
Yeah.
Mage is the answer. So keep an eye on Keith's line. He's usually right.
Yeah.
And a good place to start with your handicap.
I appreciate it, Frank. Thanks so much for having me, and hope everybody has a great Preakness weekend.
That was Pimlico line maker Keith Fiestel talking about the art and science of making the morning line for the upcoming 148th running of the Preakness Stakes, the Black Eyed Susan, and plenty of other races over Preakness, easy for me to say, Preakness weekend. We are inside the Furlong grounds here on Off to the Races Radio, powered by the Racing Biz, theracingbiz.com. Just a few minutes left in today's program. I want to bring in Nick Hahn now. Nick, a longtime friend of the program and host of our Virginia affiliate, Off to the Races Radio Virginia, that airs on ESPN Richmond each week. And asked Nick to come on, talk a little bit about the Derby, talk about his Turf 10 list of the top Turf 3-year-olds that was significantly impacted by the American Turf this past weekend, and maybe also look ahead to the Preakness. In fact, I think Nick's going to break a little news for us. Let's bring in Nick Hahn. Nick Hahn joining me here on Off to the Races Radio, powered by the Racing Biz, theracingbiz.com. Nick Hahn, welcome to the program. I wanted to bring you on to talk a little bit about last week and next week. And let's start with last week. We had the Kentucky Derby. We had the American Turf that I want to talk with you about. But we also had some other stuff going on outside the rails. And I wonder, we had a number of equine fatalities. We had a situation with Lord Miles and Saffy Joseph's horse. Now we had the controversial scratch of Forte, and now word that Forte had failed a drug test last year. We had a lot of stuff going on. And I wanted to kind of get your take on what is happening outside the rails in racing right now.
Well, I think that there were a lot of issues going into the Derby surrounding the equine deaths that happened on the racetrack at Churchill Downs. I think a lot of that has been so misreported. We've seen a number of just large misrepresentations, and then you have some of these groups that come in and try and be morally aloof in terms of preaching about how horses should be handled and how these situations should be handled. And in my opinion, it should be handled by the professionals. Racing does have some issues. I think they're well aware of them. They're trying to reform the way they handle these instances when they come up. They do act on precedent. And when you have a group outside the rails coming in and making some of these crazy assertions about the game, it's clear that they don't want to be part of the solution. They want to be part of the dissolution of the game. And you need not look any farther than when they advertise their job openings. And it's in the job descriptions what their motives really are. So I was a little disappointed in the promotion. I thought NBC did a good job, especially with the Cody's Wish story, which makes Old Yeller look like laughing. NBC did a great job with that. And I think at times you, me, and other racing publicists need to probably do a better job in terms of emphasizing the great parts of the game, the industry, the jobs, the livelihoods, the other entities in the game, such as like the James River Horse Foundation, which has been so beneficial down here in Virginia, and not listen to reporters that basically get on a soapbox and speak from a position of ethics, and they can't even pronounce some of the horses' names correctly.
Well, I think a lot of us have that problem with some of the horses' names. But all right, let's look inside the rails now and what was going on. And I wanted to talk with you about the American Turf. You maintain your Turf 10 on the racingbiz.com, your top 10 Turf 3-year-olds going a mile, going a route of ground. And I guess it raises the question, did you have Web Slinger in the American Turf?
I did not, but he was not far down my list, and he was a tasty 22-1 for Kentucky Derby winning jockey Javier Castellano. One thing that really struck me about the American Turf is how similar the circumstances were for Javier Castellano on grass some 2 hours before the Kentucky Derby. He basically got the same trip. He even had nearly the same odds and just produced a great race. From my Turf 10 list that was done some 2-3 weeks ago, we haven't really had a major 3-year-old turf stake since then. The American Turf ran pretty much to form. Mostache was a front runner. He ran a very courageous and noble race. He ended up finishing fourth in that four-way stretch duel. They were lined up four across at the furlong pole. I thought Farbridge ran a great race. If he's not on the inside and maybe gets side-by-side with Web Slinger, who knows how that would have turned out. Major Dude, who almost started in the Kentucky Derby, ran a great race as well. Johannes Behind Enemy Lines ran as we expected they might in that Turf 10. So I thought it was maybe the best race of the day, and the Derby was a great race. But congratulations, Javier, who we'll have on the Virginia show this morning, just had a great day at Churchill Downs. What a redeeming day that he had.
Yeah, pretty nice day there. Web Slinger gets the money for trainer Mark Cassie, Javier Castellano in the irons. I needed Farbridge in that spot in my pick four, so that didn't do me any good. But really, Nick, and last question on the Turf 10, there's not a lot to separate these top Turf 3-year-olds at this moment. We may be they may start to separate themselves as the year goes on. But right now, that you could put a bunch of them in the mix, and every race might come up with a different answer.
I think that's very fair, and that's why you saw more shuffling at the top. That four-way stretch duel could have turned out a number of different ways. We did find out that Nagarik, and I hope I'm pronouncing that name correctly, of the horse, Grand Motion's horse, who was previously second on my list, I moved him down to fifth, just largely because of the efforts of so many of the others in the American turf. He'll start in the Murphy on Preakness Day, so an opportunity for him to move up and in a very visible race as well.
All right, that's the American Turf, Turf 3-year-olds. Nick's Turf 10 top three, Webslinger, Farbridge, Mostache, then Major Dude, and Nagarok. So, all right, Nick, let's turn our attention here and let's talk about the Kentucky Derby for a moment. Pretty good stuff there. Late run out of Mage gets the money. We had owner and co-owner and assistant trainer Gustavo Delgado Jr. on earlier this program. Are you looking for Mage to repeat next week in the Preakness?
One thing that will be a big advantage for Mage is that he is lightly raced. That's basically, I think, the reason most horse players did not pick him for the Kentucky Derby. He just didn't have enough of a foundation, didn't have enough underneath him to get very brave. I came so close to moving Mage up into Forte's spot instead of going through the sequence of how I rated the Kentucky Derby runners. And obviously I wish I had, but Mage, I think, will benefit by being lightly raced in the Triple Crown now. He's a very talented horse. I always loved the Good Magics. And I thought it was just a great moment when Javier Castellano, who was an Eclipse Award winner in 2014, 2015, 2016, 2017, got into the Hall of Fame the following year. It was just a great day for him. It was a great moment on a weekend that had some tarnishment to it. And there was just a list of so many other good performances in that Kentucky Derby.
Yeah, it was a terrific effort. I think, like you, Nick, I think I talked a couple people into betting on Mage because I sort of said, you know, if you like Forte, how do you not like Mage since they finished a length apart in the Florida Derby? But the one person I didn't talk into betting on Mage was me. So that didn't do me any good at all. Anyway, we're going to let you go. Nick Hahn, thanks so much for joining us here on Off to the Races. And I know we'll be talking with you soon.
Great. Thanks, Frank. And looking forward to the Preakness next week. Oh, but one quick note. It does look like Lord Miles, who had a great work on Friday morning, it does look like they're just going to check him out tomorrow. They're going to check him out this morning. If everything's good, he should be in Preakness at the Preakness next week.
All right. A new shooter in the Preakness, Lord Miles. You heard it here first from Nick Hahn. Nick Hahn, thanks so much. We'll see you in Baltimore in a couple of days.
Great. Looking forward to it. Thanks, Frank.
That's going to do it here for us on this week's Off to the Races Radio, powered by The Racing Biz. Thanks so much for spending a little bit of your Saturday morning with us. We do appreciate it. Thanks to our show's supporters, including Richard Hackerman, Attorney at Law, the Maryland Horse Breeders Association, True Valor, the stallion standing at Northeast Stallion Station, and Wanamaker's online horse auction. Thanks to all our guests on this week's show, which featured Gustavo Delgado Jr., Fran Burns, Cindy Dubler, Keith Hustle, and Nick Hahn. Keep up with racing and breeding all week long on The Racing Biz, theracingbiz.com. You can tune in next Saturday at 10 a.m. here on Baltimore Positive to hear the independent voice for Mid-Atlantic Racing and Breeding. My name's Frank Vespi. Have a great week, everybody, and we'll see you in the winner's circle.